This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The Chazal say one of the many reasons or one of the many concepts that lie behind the timing of Sukkot. At this particular time of the year, obviously the natural time for Sukkot to take place would be at Pesach time. It's to commemorate the Sukkot that were built during the Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that would be the natural time. Many of the Rishonim and Achronim discuss why it is exactly at this time that the Torah requires us to sit in the Sukkot, and many answers are given. But one answer is given by Chazal itself, and they say that in case we've done something during the past year for which the punishment is golus, one has to be exiled, so we go outside into our sukkahs and the Ribbono Shel Olam considers that an exile, and we've that way we've been yotze our punishment. That's what Chazal say. And what I want to discuss with you this evening is what is the nature of golus, what is the purpose of going into exile, and how is it that the sukkah fulfills that function? What is it that it is possible to experience during sukkahs which would satisfy the Ribbono Shel Olam if he had given us a punishment, a gezeira, chas v'sholem, of golus? Golus is required basically for murder. If a person murders another person by accident, he doesn't get the death sentence as he does if he murdered on purpose. If he murdered by accident, he goes into golus. Six cities, you will remember, were laid aside, to which the unintentional murderers used to flee, and they used to stay there in golus. And there are several reasons, as we shall see. One is just that they should be away from the family, because the family would have it really in for them. And B, it's actually a punishment, going out to the golus. What is the punishment? The Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva that one of the practices one should do for tshuva, one should daven a lot, maybe spell it a lot, and change oneself, and all sorts of things. And one of the things is v'goylem yemekoyma. About tshuva, should change his place. He should go away from his hometown. Why? Shegolus mechaperes oven. Because going into redemption, going into golus, going into exile, atones for sins. Now we understand that Chazal even better. It's not just that if the Ribbono Shel Olam would have given us a gezeira of golus that we yotze with a sukkah, but more than that, golus generally has the power of kapora. Whatever it is that the Ribbono Shel Olam might have decided that we have to suffer, we can be yotze part of that suffering on sukkahs, whatever it is, because golus mechaperes oven. It is of the nature of exile to atone for sins. Why? Mipnei shegoremes lo lihikono. It causes a person to become, to submit himself, the liyos onav v'shofel ruach, and to become not only modest but also to become shofel ruach. It breaks one down. Now one understands why golus is the punishment given to the murderer. The murderer suffers from anger. He suffers from arrogance. He suffers from impulsiveness, and golus breaks a person down. And that's what a murderer needs. He needs to be broken down. He needs to know what hard life is. He needs to know what suffering is. And golus is the way that the Torah chooses to do it. How is it achieved? How does golus occur? Or rather, how does one achieve this breakdown in golus? So the Chinuch says in Mitzvah Tav Yud, Lachen ro'i l'mi shehorag. It is fitting for somebody who has murdered, afilu shogeg, even if it was by mistake. Since such a terrible calamity has occurred by his own hand, it is fitting shiyitzayir oleo tzar golus. It is fitting that he should suffer as a result of that the suffering of golus, of exile. Sheshoku kimat ketzar miso. It is considered almost as severe as the suffering of death. Golus is considered almost as bad as death. Why? Shenifrad ha'odom me'ohavo, the person separates himself from those who love him and those whom he loves, u'me'eretz mo'iladatoy, and from the land of his birth, v'shoychein kol yomov in zorim, and all his days he lives among strange people. That's what the chinuch says, among other things. There's a lot in this chinuch. But just as far as we're concerned this evening, we see what it is that causes the breakdown in the individual. The fact that he's nifrad mi'ohavov, he separates himself from those whom he loves, u'me'eretz me'lodato, and from the land of his birth, v'sheichen kol yomov imzorim, and he dwells all his life with strangers. We see the importance of society, that an individual who is estranged from his society is kim'at kemisot, practically like death. It's almost as bad as death. We see that a person needs a society. We see that a person needs an eretz moiladatoi, he needs a birthplace, he needs a place which is his home country. That there is such a concept, a hometown, a home country. And that if he's away from his home country, there's suffering, there's tsar. And that tsar of being away from his home country is almost the same as the tsar of death, chas v'shom. V'sheichen kol yomov imzorim, and all his days he lives among strangers. And that last statement is the most difficult of all. What does it mean, all his days he lives among strangers? Let him make new friends with. He's among strangers for the first day, for the first week, for the first month, for the first year. But if he's there for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, surely he'll make new friends. So you see now. You see, the same as a person has what we call a mother tongue, and he never can change that mother tongue. He's always got it. He might be 5 years old when he leaves the country whose language is his mother tongue, and he never speaks that language again, and he can never adopt another mother tongue. He's a foreigner in every other language after that. The language that he learns in his first few years of life, that becomes his mother tongue, and there's no way that any other language can become as dominant as his mother tongue. He can lose his mother tongue too, but then he's got no mother tongue. But he can't acquire a new mother tongue. There is no such thing. And here too, we see that there's such a concept of an eretz meiladatoi, of a mother country, of a mother land, of a mother town, a place where a man comes from. And if he goes away from there, he's shoychein kol yomov imzorim. For the rest of his life, he's among strangers. He will never make friends there the way he had in his hometown. He will never feel at home in a new town as he felt in his own town. That will never occur. He's always among zorim. It's a tremendous chidush. It's an unbelievable concept. Something that the sociologists should know, and something that everybody should know, not only for their own lives, but to know how to be sensitive and caring about people who've come to our town from other towns. And no matter how long they might live in our town, never will they feel at home totally, and they'll always feel among zorim. And it's necessary, as part of hospitality, to make sure as far as one can that they feel at home, but they'll never feel absolutely at home. That's the nature of Golus, that ultimately, no matter how long you live there, you're among zorim, you're in a strange land. Is it possible, as we said with a mother tongue, you can lose a mother tongue, is it possible to lose a motherland? Is it possible to lose a home country and not to acquire a new one? Possible to be a person who doesn't have a home country. After Cain killed Hevel, it was the first case of murder, and the punishment is golus, exile. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Cain, "Ki tzavoides ho'adoma loisosef teis koicho loch, as you work the land, it will not continuously give of its strength to you. Nor v'nod tiyev oritz, you will be a traveling wanderer in the land." That's what's going to happen to you. You will be wandering from place to place. Says the Ramban, if you listen carefully to the words, a very interesting concept. V'hatam, that means, what does it mean? Sheloi yonuach liboi, that his heart will not rest. Veloi yishkoit, and he will never have peace. Lamoid b'mokoim echod mimeno, in order to dwell in one part of the world. Aval yiyye goyle lo'olam, that he will be wandering around from place to place forever. Ki oynesh haroitzchim golus, because the punishment of the rotzeach, the murderer, is golus, is exile. So the Ramban tells us a very big chiddush. Normally, when a person murders unintentionally, we decree Golus. We send him out and he has to go. That's his Golus, finished, he goes to another town. With Cain, it was different. With Cain, the Ramban tells us it was going to be compulsive wandering. He would not be able to stay in one place. Because to stay in one place, you need Menuchas Lev, Shelo Yanuach, Libay Velo Yishkot. You need to be a person with what's the word? Calm. You need to be a person with Menuchas Nefesh. You need to be a settled person. You need to have Yishuv Hadas. You need to know where you're going. There's a skill, there's an art in being able to stay in one place. And if one doesn't stay in one place, or if one doesn't have that art, if one doesn't have that skill, one cannot stay in one place. One needs to move and move and move. That's the only way one feels one's getting on. And the klala to Cain, the curse to Cain, was not, I'm going to force you to move. That's not what the Ribbono Shel Olam says according to the Ramban. But Shelo Yanuach Libo, your heart will not rest. Velo Yishkot, and it will not be quiet. Lamaid b'mokom echod imimeno, in order to enable you to stay in one place. You won't have the mental and the spiritual capacity to stay in one place. You're going to need to travel. And that urge to travel and need to travel and urge to move is the klala of Cain. It's the curse that was given to Cain. The inability to stay put. Why? Because traveling creates an illusion of progress. One comes to a new place and things are new, everything is new. And we have the attitude very often that if we're doing new things, we're progressing. It's a sign that we're progressing. So in order to find new things to do, when we finish doing new things here, we go somewhere else and we do new things. That's the person who can never settle down, who can never get anywhere. Always needs to change and move and do something new. What does the Torah want from a person? Not that. Once Menuchas Lev, that a person should have his heart settled, the Yishkot, and he should be quiet. Lamoid b'mokum echod, so that he develops the ability to stay put in one place. Because if you stay put in one place, you need to develop in other areas. You start getting bored. So what do you do when you're bored? You start improving yourself. You start developing yourself. You start developing new skills. You start learning new things. You start developing new interests and new hobbies. You start applying your mind in new ways. You don't just run. Running creates the illusion of progressing. Running creates the illusion of experiencing new things. But Lamai says, mother, you're not experiencing anything new, you're just experiencing the old things over again in a different place. That's all it is. Really experiencing new things is when you do the same things, but you're different, not the place is different. You're different. You got up yesterday morning and you washed your face and brushed your teeth and you're doing it again this morning. But this morning is different to yesterday because I am different this morning from yesterday. That's progress. That's the ability to progress while one's staying in one place, not to run around like a mashugana. And Cain lost that ability the moment he committed the murder against Hevel. The Ribbono Shel Olam cursed him that he would not have the inner capacity to rest in one place, but he would become a compulsive wanderer. If that's the case, that an unsettled insight causes exile, causes traveling, and traveling causes an unsettled inside, then we should examine what it is with sukkahs. Is it feasible that in sukkahs there's something unsettling about sukkahs? So there's a very interesting halacha in Siman Tafresh Lamed Tes. Kol zayin hayomim koirei v'loy meid b'toich ha-sukkah. For all the 7 days of sukkahs up to Hoshana Rabba, if one is reading, if one's learning Chumash, or one is learning Mishnayos, or Gemara, b'toich ha-sukkah, you learn in the sukkah. That's the right place to learn. U'cheshem meivin, u'medakdek b'mashi yikro. But if you're learning carefully, if you're trying to be medakdek in every word, you're trying to learn with concentration, yochel lilmed chutz l'sukkah. Then you can learn in your house. You don't have to learn in the sukkah. Kedei shetehei da'atoy miyusheves olav. So that you should have yishuv hadas. So that your mind should be settled. So we see that halacha recognizes, this is based on the Gemara in Sukkah, we see already that the halacha recognizes and puts into practice the concept that there is something unsettling about a sukkah, sufficiently unsettling to prevent you being able to learn. That it's able to do. One can read superficially, one can go through a bit of learning, but if one's going to sit and learn properly, one's allowed to learn inside. You can't concentrate properly in the sukkah. Why not? It's true that the sukkah is golus. So Chazal tell us. But what kind of golus is it? The Gemara tells us that you've got to take out your good furniture, and you've got to take out your good pots and pans, and your good cutlery and crockery and tablecloths and your armchairs and your sforim you should take out if possible, whatever you can take out to make yourself comfortable there, and you move in permanently. What kind of golus is this? There you're sitting with your silver cutlery and crockery, rather your silver cutlery and your Rosenthal crockery, Stanley, is that right? And your family is around you, and your friends are around you. Where's the golus? You're sitting, you're drinking, and you're singing, and you're dancing, and you're learning. It's wonderful. Is that golus? We see that there is something of golus in it, and that we don't have the Yishuv Hadas. What is it about the sukkah that Chazal regard as a golus sufficiently so that the Ribbono Shel is prepared to say, okay, after sukkahs, you've had your golus, I excuse you? What is the suffering that we've undergone for these 7 days so much that the Ribbono Shel is prepared to consider that a golus? One of the worst punishments, we give it to a man who's murdered. The Chinuch says it's nearly like death. That means if Chas v'Shalom we've done the most terrible things for which the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to have golus, he's prepared to accept sitting in the sukkah. Halavai, all punishments should be like sitting in the sukkah. The Maharal defines, in the beginning of Nesach Yisrael, he defines, he says, in Sofek there is no doubt, ki hagolus Shinui v'yetzio min ha-seder. Golus is a change and a going out of seder, of order, of discipline. That's what golus is, a change in discipline and a going out from discipline. If that's golus, then one begins to understand. So the Maharal is defining the essence of it. It's not just that you're leaving your dear ones behind. It's not just that you're leaving your birthplace behind. What is it about a birthplace? I've often asked people who've emigrated, what was the hardest thing to get used to? And they often think a little bit and they say, you know what the difficult thing is? At home, I used to know if I wanted a roll of sellotape, I go to the CNA. And if I want a toothbrush and a toothpaste, I go to the chemist. And if I want whatever it is, you knew each thing where you go. I want soap powder for the clothes, I go to the hypermarket. I knew exactly where to go. You don't know where to go for simple little things. You don't know where to buy a pencil, where to buy a pen, where to buy a piece of paper. You don't know. It takes time. That's the goal. So Shira Min HaSeder, you don't. Things have changed. Things are different. You don't know where to go. You don't know what to do. In little matters. But it's so painful. And it causes such suffering and disorganization of one's mind that you don't know where things are and where to go to get things. That's as the Maharal is the Pshat in Golus. It's a movement away from the things with which you're familiar. The things that you've grown up with, the things that you're born with, the things that you know intimately, that you instinctively know about these things. Comes a goal that you go to another country, you've got to start again, without the instinctive knowledge that you've accumulated over the years of your life. That becomes useless and you've got to start again from scratch. That's goal. It's a shinui v'yetziyu min ha-seder. It's a change and a movement out from seder, from order. If that's the case, that's pshat in this halacha. Your sukkah must be comfortable, and it can be comfortable. You can put up the most magnificent sukkah. It can have wooden walls, and it can have central heating, and it can be comfortable. It can have seats there with cushions. It can have running hot and cold water. Well, the more you put in, the better it is as far as the halacha is concerned. The more comfortable you make it, the more you make it like your home, the better it is. So what's the difference at the end? Let's say you do it exactly as you live in your home. So why should you learn inside and not learn out in the sukkah? What's the difference? It's not your home. That's the difference. Things are in a different place. That's all. You've got to look for things in a different place. You won't find them where it's familiar. And that is sufficient to distract a person in his learning, so much so that Chazal are prepared to paskin that rather learn inside. As great a mitzvah as it is to sit in the sukkah. The Vilna Gaon paskens that even if you sit in the sukkah just to sit without even eating, you should say a bracha. So mitzvah just to sit in the sukkah. How much more so to learn in the sukkah? But if you can't learn in the sukkah, it's difficult to learn. If one's going to learn with meticulousness and if one's going to learn with depth, it's distracting in the sukkah. Why? Just because the sukkah is not your home. That's all. You're not used to it. It's a new things are organized in a different way. It's a new routine and you don't know where everything is. Everything's strange. And that strangeness is just enough to throw you off guard. And anybody who's tried to concentrate on their learning knows how one little thing throwing them off their guard can lose their concentration and that's the end of their learning, it's finished. On can't afford the luxury of being disturbed by disorder and by disorganization. And that's what Sukkot is. It's a change of order. It's a shinui v'yitziyon min ha-seder. That's all it is. It's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's a tremendous chag. But the one little bit of discomfort is that there's a shinui, there's a change of order. What does this change of order mean? That means that the seder is tremendously important for one's learning. We see the same concept in the Gemara in Brochus, where the Gemara speaks very highly of a person who is koveya mokum litfilosu, a person who always davens in the same place. It's not even talking about a person who always davens in the same shul, that's taken for granted. We're talking about a person who always davens in the same place in the same shul. That's his place, that's where he stands and davens. And the Gemara goes into tremendous praise for him. The Ribbono Shel Olam calls him all sorts of wonderful things, and if he's not there, the Ribbono Shel Olam asks after him, where is he? He's got his makom kavur, and his makom is empty, his place is empty. Why is it so important? So Rabbi Elie Lopian explains that the effect of davening in a place which you're not used to is devastating on one's davening. It's one would think not, one would think you've got your usual siddur in front of you. All you've got to do is follow the words inside and have a bit of kavon on what you're saying. No, says Rabbi. Just not being in the same place is already a complete distraction to your davening. And the davening is not the same. You're davening with the same siddur and you're shockling just as much, and you think you're davening with the same kavon. Everything you're trying to do the same. And we're talking about where you're davening in the same shul, just in a different place in the shul. Says Rabbi, it's not the same. It is not possible to daven the same way in a place in which you're not used to. As one gets used to a place, so one grows into it, so one develops with it, and so it becomes part of one. You know the famous story with the Vilna Gaon, where a man disappeared. Nobody knew where he was, but they couldn't prove that he was dead, and therefore his wife was an aguna, she couldn't remarry. So she remained a living widow for years and years. About 20 years later, a man comes back, and he walks into the house, and he says, "Hello, darling," and she says, "Who are you?" She says, "What do you mean, who am I? You haven't seen me for 20 years, and I'm your husband." And she looks at him and she says, "You're not my husband." He says, "What's wrong with you? I know you've suffered for 20 years, but you've gone a little bit. Is something the matter with you? You don't recognize me?" She looks at him, "No, you're not my husband." He says, "Test me. Ask me whatever you want. You want to know when you were born? I'll tell you your birthday, the children's birthdays, whatever their names, whatever you want, tell me." And she starts examining him. Intimate things that only her husband could have known, and he answers everything. She felt unhappy about it, and the Shaila got to the Vilna Gaon, and the Vilna Gaon said, "Okay, this is no problem. Take him into shul on Friday night and let him walk first. Everybody should make a big fuss of him and welcome him to the shul, but let him walk to his seat first, see if he remembers where to sit." And of course he walked into shul and he didn't know where to go. And they asked the Vilna Gaon afterwards, "How did you know that he wouldn't know where to go?" So Vilna Gaon said, "If it wasn't her husband, then obviously he had met her husband and he had told him all the intimate information that he would need in order to masquerade as his husband." He said, "People like that forget about shuls. They don't talk about shuls. He won't remember to tell him where he sits in shuls. They're not thinking of shuls when they do this kind of thing." So the Vilna Gaon, but you see there the concept of his own place. It's after 20 years he would know, he would automatically walk to his place. That's his makom. And in those days it wasn't just his makom, it was his father's makom and his grandfather's makom and the family's makom. That's where they used to sit, that's where the whole family used to sit, in that particular place, and that's where they used to daven. And he was used to davening there already from a little boy, a little child. He grows up, that's the position, that's the angle from which he sees the shul. I remember as a child the first time I went, it wasn't even during shul, it was after shul, I went on to the other side of the shul, and the shock I got to see the shul look so different from the other side. I'd never been to the other side of the shul. Never used to come in, sit down in my place, go out from the shul as a little child. I had never seen what the Oron Kodesh looks like from a different angle, what the Bima looks like from a different angle. I'd never been there. That's my place, that's where I sit. And Rebellia says, as we've just said, that he's not even talking about people who, he says, not like the people nowadays, and Rebellia said this about 30 years ago, not like people nowadays who wander from shul to shul and daven here and daven there. That one place, one shul, one mokum, this is where it is. In South Africa, until recently, that also used to be the case, because people used to pay for their seats. So that used to be, they used to feel a bit of ownership, they used to feel a bit of pride, this is my place. And it's one of the unfortunate losses of the movement into little shuls like this, that there isn't that feeling of attachment to a place in the shul. It becomes like gypsy caravans. One day it's here, one day it's there, it doesn't really matter where it is. I'm davening, what difference does it make where I'm davening? The Gemara happens to say it does make a difference. The Shulchan Aruch happens to say that it does make a difference. You say it doesn't make a difference. What kind of Jew are you? Do you accept the Gemara? Do you accept the Shulchan Aruch? Do you accept the Torah? If you do, what are you messing around with the Torah for? What are you disagreeing with it for when it suits you to disagree? The Torah says the same shtender, the same table, the same Abba Amos. Don't move out of it. And you're prepared not only to change our Bahamas, but one day to daven here, one day to daven there. What kind of Yiddishkeit are we creating, which is moving so far away from the Yiddishkeit laid down in the Gemara by our forefathers? What are we creating? Some new reform. But we don't see it that way, because it's become accepted. That doesn't make any difference. 50 years ago, it became accepted in South Africa not to keep Shabbos. So what is the difference between those people who stopped keeping Shabbos because it became become accepted, and those people who've ignored Davov in Brachas because it's become accepted? What difference is there? It's both Reform Yiddishka. It's both a movement away from tradition. It's both a movement away from Chazal, a movement away from Shulchan Aruch. That's not how it's meant to be. To have a Mokum Kavua means you miss the fun in other places. Good, that's how the Torah wants it to be. You choose carefully where you want to be. And if afterwards you think that there's more fun somewhere else, you change your Mokum Kavua, but even that shouldn't take place too often in a lifetime. And becomes unstable. But at least, once one's made one's decision, that's where one davens. Shachris, Mincha, Ma'ariv. Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, every day of the week. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Simchas Torah. That's where I daven. That's where the Ribbono Shel Olam and I meet, on that particular spot. There's also the famous story that's told that somebody walked into a little shul somewhere in Europe, stood and he davened, and afterwards he felt that he never davened like that. And he mentioned it to one of the people there. You know, I've never had a tefillah like that. They said to him, you know why? Once the Vilna Gaon came in and he stood exactly there, that's where he davened. And that's what you picked up. The effect that a man can have on a place, and that a place can have on a man. That one becomes very intimate with a mokka, one becomes very intimate with a place. One has one's roots in a place, one builds in a place, one grows and develops in a place. One doesn't just chop and change and run around. And if that's the case in davening, where all you need to do is read the words, that's all you need to do. It's a bit of kavona. And on that, Chazal say, but if you change your place from this standard to this standard, you're already suffering in kavona, you can't have the same intention. How much more so when you've got to learn a black demora? And you've got to understand the concept. When you're battling to derive some depth into something which is being explained, or into something which you're trying to perceive. In yeshiva we used to be makpid in the shiurim to sit in exactly the same places, not never to change. If somebody was in our place when we walked in, we used to get him and push him out. That's it. It's my place. It's not my place because I'm possessive about it. It's my place because if I'm not sitting there, I won't be able to concentrate properly. I'm not prepared to sacrifice a shiur. You knew it makes no difference where you sit. Sit wherever you want to, but not here. And it used to be never for a new boy, it used to be quite terrifying. He would walk in and he would always be first. He would be early, sit down with his Gemara, and the first person would come and say, excuse me, and move him up a little bit. So he'd sit down again, and somebody else would say, you know, you're sitting in so and so's place, so move up a little bit more. Somebody else would come and say, and the place was filling up. All of a sudden he sees already the whole table's full, there's no place anymore, and the last person walks through the door and he knows already what's going to happen. The fellow taps him on the shoulder and says, you're in my place. Takes his Gemara and looks around sheepishly. If it's a very nice yeshiva, somebody might bring him a chair and put him in the second row or something like that. And it can take months and months until somebody dies or leaves the yeshiva before he can get a seat at the table. But chas v'sholem, nobody would think of allowing anybody else to sit in their place, because it would disturb their concentration. That not. And it used to be a sign of tremendous prestige and seniority in the yeshiva as to where you were sitting, because you couldn't have just got that place for nothing. You must have been there for a long time in order to get a good place. how much more so is it in learning, where it's necessary to have a mokum kavua, to have a place which is fixed. But having a place which is fixed, one has to understand in terms of the Maharal also, to avoid, when we talk about Golus, Golus doesn't just mean leaving my birthplace, leaving my hometown. Golus also means Yitzio min Haseda. When we talk about exile, we're talking about being exiled from the order of things, from one's routine. It is the routine which is so important, and the place forms part of the routine. It's not that the place alone is so important. The place forms part of the routine. In addition to the place, there have to be the other things which go in a disciplined fashion together with the place. And so when one's talking about a seder to one's davening, one's talking about davening at the same time every day, one's talking about davening at the same sort of pace every day, one's talking about davening out of the same siddur every day, it's very important to get used to a siddur until one's really familiar. One might change later on, but to get used to a siddur properly, that you get familiar with where the words are and how they look. In learning, it becomes important again. Say that there has to be timing, there has to be a fixed time that one learns. This is it, come what may, at this time I sit down and learn. It's part of my mokum kavua, it's part of having a fixed place, is that I also have a fixed time. Comes to say, I know what I'm doing, that's my seder, that's the pleasure of being at home, and that's the tsar of travel, that's the pain of travel. We become insensitive to it, but even when we're on holiday, a sensitive, disciplined person suffers. He feels a yitziyah min haseder. It's nice, holiday, relaxing, and new experiences and all the rest of it, but he feels a little bit lost. He's out of his learning, and his davening is what it should be. All of a sudden things are going wild around him. He doesn't have that same seder that he's used to. It's a terrible blow to a person if he's sensitive to these things and if he's involved in spiritual growth. But okay, we'll talk about that just now. The nicer one tries as far as possible to enjoy the pleasures of being at home, being a fixed place and a fixed time, because one can organize one's life around fixed places and fixed times. When one has decided where one wants to daven and where one wants to learn, one buys a house or one moves into an apartment nearby that place. You can organize yourself. When you know what time they daven in that place and what time they learn, one organizes one's discipline around that. It's not terribly difficult. When one goes on holiday, one goes traveling, you've got no more control, and that's why you're thrown out. But it's one of the things that I try very hard to be makbid to do, not always, not often very successfully, but it's to try and learn at the same time as the Beis HaMidrash is learning wherever in the world I am. It's quite difficult when I'm in Japan or on the west coast of America, where it's sometimes funny times, but even then, it's the pleasure of knowing now the Beis HaMidrash is learning and now I'm learning. It's the same Seder. The Mokum has changed, but at least the Seder is the same. Learning the same things at the same time, there's not that much of a change. It enables a certain stability to continue. It enables there to be a continuity. It enables you to continue building on what you did yesterday, not having to start something altogether new and not being able to find your hands and feet. There are other things to a Seder. Perhaps one of the most important things to a Seder in education is a system of education. It's a style of education that one doesn't chop and change. We spoke a little bit earlier about Musa, and the Gros says stick to the Musa with which you started. Don't chop and change. Musa is something very personalized. The art of education is something which you find something that fits into you. You find something which is your type of style and you stick with it right until you're finished with it, until you're a complete person. And then one can go. I always say, if one has a home, one can be a visitor somewhere else. But if you're always a visitor somewhere else, then you're a gypsy. You don't have a home at all. You're not a visitor. A visitor is a person who has a home, and occasionally goes out of his home into somebody else's home. A person who has a derech, he has an approach in Yiddishkeit, he has an approach in his learning, he belongs to a certain school of learning, a school of understanding, a school of behavior, a school of character development, and he chooses for a short period to go somewhere else. He goes as a guest. That's good, that can be a very enriching experience to go somewhere as a guest. But he doesn't go as a confused gypsy who doesn't know quite where he is. One day he's here, one day he's there, one day he's hearing this approach, one day he's hearing that approach, and he's busy trying to put together such a mishmash that it can't possibly make sense no matter how intelligent he is. That's part of the Seder. To have a fixed place, to have a fixed time, and to have a fixed derech. This is the derech I follow. And Lithuania people used to move after many years in one yeshiva, they used to move to another yeshiva. But usually it was a yeshiva that followed the same derech until they were big Talmidei Chachomim. When they were big Talmidei Chachomim, they used to go for a year to Brisk, or they would go for a year to the Chofetz Chaim. Just for a year. just to get a bit of richness, to get something else for a year, and then go back to where they were used to, where they used to be. That's, they had a home, and they went for a short period in order to become a guest somewhere else, in order to become complete somewhere else, in order to experience the richness of another approach. That's part of the Seder that is disrupted even by something as small, or what would appear to be so small as a sukkah. Just that I'm changing, I'm living in a different room, it's more comfortable than my own room, doesn't matter, it's different. Things aren't where they used to be, there's a change in the Seder, and that's enough to cause one to be unable to learn in depth, and rather learn inside, rather forgo the mitzvah of sukkah. It's more important that you should learn properly, go inside and learn inside. Don't allow the sukkah to disturb your learning because of the change in Seder. Sometimes though one has to move around a little bit. Sometimes there has to be a change in Seder. How do we relate to that, and how do we handle it? A person decides he has to be a visitor somewhere else, or he's got a job of work to do, he has to travel, he has to go somewhere else. The Gemara asks a very interesting question. The din is that on Shabbos, neither are you allowed to build, nor are you allowed to destroy. However, the only destruction or destructive activity which is punishable by death on Shabbos is if you destroy in order to build. That's the purpose of your destruction. If you're destroying just to destroy, that's not an issue skiller. But if you're destroying in order to rebuild, that's considered a constructive act of action. And a further restriction is placed, and that is that it must be constructed to construct in the same place. If I take down this building on Shabbos, I will only be chayav skila if I plan to rebuild on the same site. But if I'm taking down the building because I want to use the raw material in another building in another place, that's not a chayav skila. And so the Gemara asks a very difficult question. Michtis says the Gemara, let's see, kol melachis yalfin and luvim mishkan. This is Gemara on Shabbos that lamed alef from the base. All the melachas we learn from the Mishkan, the Hosam says, "I'm not leaving the Shalabim Koimahu." And how did they used to destroy there? They used to unpack the Mishkan, like our sukkahs. Then the sukkahs, we take it down. They used to take down the Mishkan, the tabernacle, and where were they going to rebuild it? In another place, at the next camp. And that's from where we learn that you're not allowed to destroy on Shabbos. So we see that the type of destruction which the Torah is talking about is destruction to build somewhere else. No, answers the Gemara. Awesome, there's different. Kivan dichtiv al pi Hashem yachanu, by the mouth of Hashem will they camp. Kaseser al manas liv nois bin koimer dami. This is like breaking down in order to build in your place. Is the Gemara fantastic? You say, where am I now? Where's the Mishkan now? The Mishkan is now where the Ribbono Shel Olam wants it to be. And where's the Mishkan going to be tomorrow? The Mishkan is going to be where the Ribbono Shel Olam wants it to be. So that's the same place. There's been no change of place. The fact that there's just a physical change, that halachically is not considered. Since in both cases it's where the Ribbono Shel Olam wants it, the definition of the place is identical. There we have to know too that there's a different kind of golus too. Sometimes there's a golus where al pi halacha it's the right thing to do. Sometimes one has to daven in another place. Sometimes one has to learn in another place. Sometimes one has to live in another place for a period of time. Sometimes one has to change a routine. Provided it's done al pi Hashem yachanu, provided we're sure that this is a decision of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that he wants me to move from here to there, not for anything I've done wrong, but because that's what needs to be done at the moment, it's not a golus. That means the Seder is being changed by the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's not a change in Seder. In both cases I'm doing what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to do. Here I'm doing what he wants me to do, and there I'm doing what he wants me to do, and that's not considered a golus. That's not considered a change in place. And that's the only place the way that people who emigrate can really retain their sanity. To feel it's not an immigration. I lived in Johannesburg as long as the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted me to live in Johannesburg. When he wants me to live in Timbuktu, that's why I'm living in Timbuktu now. There's no change of place. Johannesburg is no less strange than Timbuktu. The only reason I felt at home there is because that's where the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted me to be, so now I'm here. And that makes the golus a little bit more easy to tolerate, a little bit more easy to suffer. So there is such a concept where we're able to adjust ourselves as far as possible to a new situation if we're satisfied that that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. But apart from that, when we're not satisfied that that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, you have to be terribly careful of the distractiveness and the destructiveness of hopping around, the kind of tendency that we called on Rosh Hashanah the life of the Gypsy Jew, and it's a life in it's a social kind of existence, and it's a spiritual kind of existence, and it's a learning kind of existence, and it's a davening kind of existence, and it's justified. The way it's justified is, well, why shouldn't I, if I can get a shiur over here at 9 o'clock and a shiur over there at 10 o'clock and another shiur back here at 11 o'clock, that's three shiur, and if I stayed here I would only have one. So surely three is better than one. The answer is not. Three is not necessarily better than one. If three builds on two and two builds on one and it's all going in the same direction, then three is better than one. But if one's tearing one's mind in a dozen pieces, and one's tearing one's body in a dozen pieces, and one's distracting oneself and moving from here to there, rather the one should learn it properly, spend the extra 2 hours that you would have spent on the other shiur, spend revising the one that you learned. It's quite horrifying to me how completely non-existent is the concept at the moment in our Beis HaMedrash of I won't say completely, but nearly completely non-existent of dwelling on a concept a little bit, integrating it. A Motzei Shabbos shiur takes me, or a Friday night Rosh, it makes a difference, it takes me many, many hours to prepare. So it's not possible that you can understand it in an hour. And even if you could understand it in an hour, it's not possible that you could integrate it in an hour. I don't understand it and integrate it in the hour and in the many hours. I spend the following week not preparing the next one, but dwelling on this one. That's why you will very often find that the next one is a continuation in some form or other of this one, because the whole week my mind has been occupied on this one. And people somehow don't bother. The shiurim are meant to be the conversation around the tables. The shiurim are meant to be the things one looks into a little bit. If I quote the Chazal, it's worthwhile taking the Chazal and looking into it, seeing how I learnt it. If you don't understand why I learnt it that way, coming to ask, why, where did you see it in the Chazal, where does it say that, couldn't it be learnt another way, understanding exactly what the process of thought is, so that you learn to think properly and to analyse properly and to reason properly, instead of running around from one shiur to another to try and get a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more, and as the one thing goes in, so it pushes out what was in before, and that's the last thing that remains in, and there's absolutely no clarity and absolutely no continuity and absolutely no approach to what's happening and to what's going on. That is so destructive and so disorientating and so negative. It's not just that the more the one learns the better, it's the better one learns the better. And rather learn a little bit and be sure that you know what it's all about, and try and cram your little mind with a lot of things that it's not possible to really absorb and to integrate in one go. And this is something that we will be dealing with in Mirtzah Hashem over the coming weeks, because particularly with the changes in geography of this part of the world, it's become more of a problem than it used to be, in that there was a time when these were the only shiurim in this particular area. So anybody in the Syria, this is where they were learning. Baruch Hashem, it's not like that anymore. It's becoming a much richer area, and will become a still richer area with many attractions and many good shiurim and many things to learn and to study. And one needs to decide with oneself very carefully where one wants to learn at a particular stage in one's life, but not to become a runaround gypsy. One has to find for oneself a spiritual home. One has to find for oneself an Eretz Moledes, a place where you're going to be raised, where you're going to be directed, where your character is going to be molded, where your thinking process is going to be systematized, where your children are going to be brought up. That's what one needs to find, a Moledes. When one has a Moledes, one can go visiting now and again. But one has a Moledes to which to come home. But a person who doesn't have a Moledes is suffering from the tremendous curse of Cain. That was a nova nod to Yebaoritz. You will have in your heart a dissatisfaction. Wherever you are, you'll be dissatisfied. Wherever you are, you'll be thinking maybe it's better somewhere else. Wherever you are, your heart will never be rested. You'll never be able to concentrate because you're going to be thinking of other things. The ability to concentrate is part of the same Seder. Lack of concentration is also gogus. Can't keep one's mind in one place. It's always wandering, running around. It's part of the curse of Cain. And there's no question that one's bodily activities affects one's mind. And if one's used to running around physically, one's mind can't possibly sit on one subject long enough to be able to understand it and to be able to deepen oneself in it. It's not feasible. That's the way the human being works. He is affected by his bodily actions. And this is something which somehow is a section of Torah which has been completely forgotten and ignored. And if it were just a section, Okay, so there's one section of Torah which people don't know. It's not the end of the world. But it's the Yesoda Yesodas. It's the very first step. It's the very first foundation. This comes before anything else. The understanding that one has to find for oneself a Miletus, one has to find for oneself a hometown, one has to find for oneself a school of thought which one is going to absorb and imbibe and follow and build on and develop. It might take one a period of time before one finds that. One might have to travel around a little bit before one finds that. But wherever one finds that, that's where one settles down. And one's going to do far, far better doing it that way than running around. And I've said many times in the past, and I'll say many times in the future, I would rather there were 5 people in the space of Medrash or 10 people in the space of Medrash who were here, sitting and learning. And the others were sitting and learning equally consistently in other Bosei Medrash, in other yeshivas, and in other places. That would be fine. Rather that than to have 500 people here dropping in and out and running around all over the place. Because it's a total waste of time. It's not possible to learn Torah in that fashion. It's not possible to grow in Torah in that fashion. And it's a distraction for the people, it's a distraction for others, it's a distraction to myself, and it's just completely unproductive. Rather learn, find one's place somewhere else, rather than to run around and try and dance at all the weddings, as they say. It's not necessary. This is a yesod that we have to learn and that we have to understand, and something that we have to develop. Kind of sukkah that the Shulchan Aruch talks about, not the kind of sukkahs we make. A sukkah where you've got your carpets outside, your dining room suite outside, your bedroom suite outside, and your finest cutlery and crockery outside, and your sforim outside. We're talking about a sukkah which has become your living room. To understand that even that is not good enough for learning. It's good enough to eat in, it's good enough to sleep in. It's called golus. There's a certain degree of suffering even in that. But to learn, no. If one finds that one is being distracted by the strangeness of the layout, by the strangeness of the atmosphere, one rather picks oneself up and sits down in the place where one's used to learning, in the place where one regularly learns. Now something as far as the men are concerned also, to see that you learn in regular places, meaning absolutely physically. If you have a kriyas in the Beis HaMedrash, that's where it should take place. If your kriyas is at home, then it should always take place at home. Not one day in this home, and one day in that home, and one day in the Beis HaMedrash, and next week we'll see where it will be. Not like that at all. The same as it has to have a fixed time, so it has to have a fixed place. This is where we learn. This is where we sit. And this is how we do it. And with that, it should be possible to go through the suffering, if one can put it that way, of the Sukkos Golus, understanding the mercy and the kindness of the Ribbono Shel Olam, that He's prepared to give us these 7 days of happiness. He's prepared to count as a golus, as an exile, provided we at least learn the concept of what an exile is. And we learn and understand that when Sukkos is over, we come back inside, thankfully and gratefully, back to where everything, we know where everything is, and we enjoy being back inside with the security of knowing where everything is, with the seder of knowing where everything is. So we're out of our golus, and we're able to continue growing and developing, building 2 on top of 1 and 3 on top of 2, so that we're able to make ourselves into greater and greater people.